Welcome, everyone. This is the Council of Institutional Investors Educational Podcast. I'm Jeff Mahoney, General Counsel of CII. I'm here today with Bob Conway, the author of The Truth About Public Accounting, Understanding and Managing the Risks the Auditors Bring to the Audit. Bob is also an expert witness and consultant on technical accounting and financial reporting. Welcome back, Bob.
Glad to be here, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
So, Bob, you recently published an article titled "The Audit Profession's Inability to Retain Talent Poses a Serious Threat to Audit Quality." What motivated you to write this article at this particular point in time?
Jeff, I see a crisis brewing in the auditing profession. I've been in and around the auditing profession for 40 years, and high turnover has always been part of the large audit firm staffing model. In the past, the audit firms have always been able to hire enormous numbers of new people to replace the professionals leaving the firm. However, now that no longer seems to be the case. There is currently a personnel shortage that is putting audit quality at a heightened risk.
So, Bob, why do you believe we suddenly have a personnel shortage in the auditing profession?
Well, there are a confluence of factors that are leading to what I would say is a perfect storm scenario. And I'll give you my short list of those factors. I think people are well aware that companies all over America are struggling with what is being referred to as the Great Reset and the Great Resignation. The pandemic challenged age-old concepts such as commuting to work in a central location. Many workers were fortunate to find out that they could work effectively from home. The pandemic also gave many employees time to reflect on what was important to them. Many valued more time with their family over the grindstone of the daily commute and struggling to climb the corporate ladder. Many have found working from home was the best of both worlds. Now the genie is out of the bottle. Employees are looking for better work-life balance opportunities, and employers are challenged with how to deliver. But here's the real kicker. All employees are dealing with these factors to some degree, but the employers that are really suffering are the ones who've been squeezing employees for productivity with no relief in sight, such as the public accounting firms. The public accounting firms are finally paying the price for having mismanaged their human capital for decades. Younger people are pushing back on expectations to make incredible sacrifices as part of the public accounting tradition. Here are two statistics that tell me that a crisis is just around the corner. Enrollment in accounting majors at the university level are in decline. And secondly, the pipeline of newly minted CPAs is also in decline. Word of the long hours and the absence of work-life balance gets back to college campuses rapidly via social media. This is driving potential future auditors to other majors such as computer science and technology-related fields.
So, Bob, what do you believe the audit firms are currently doing to cope with the situation you just described?
Well, the large audit firms are definitely in scramble mode. While they're spending some time looking in the mirror trying to determine what they need to do differently, higher starting salaries are the primary tool the large firms are leading with. This quickly translates, of course, into higher audit fees. The easy thing for the audit firms to do is to say that this is just the effects of inflation, so audit fees are going up. The more honest truth, when you boil it all down, is that corporate America is absorbing the cost of the large audit firm human capital mismanagement by paying audit firms higher audit fees.
So, Bob, in addition to paying higher salaries, what are some of the other things you believe the audit firms are trying to do to address this situation?
Well, right now, the larger audit firms are all jockeying for position for part of the ESG attestation business. Many are saying that ESG will be the glitzier side of the attestation business, which is expected to be of higher interest to young audit professionals. So new professionals will be lured into the audit part of the business with promises that part of their workload will be involved in the more glamorous area of ESG attestations. This might sound good on the drawing board. However, the reality is that the audit firms will be borrowing from an excess supply of auditors that simply doesn't exist. In other words, they'll be, you know, using these auditors on ESG work that they're scrambling to fill already. So I'm not quite sure how the math works out. In the near term, this means the need for auditors will outstrip the supply. The audit firms will be hiring less qualified accounting graduates to simply meet headcount needs, but the quality of the professionals hired will be lower and audit quality will suffer.
So, Bob, from what you're describing, it sounds like timely partner and manager review could be increasingly critical to preserving audit quality. So what are some of your thoughts on that issue?
Well, it's another part of the overall problem. First, I'll give the audit firms credit. One of the positive things the audit firms have done over the last 15 years has been to introduce a career manager role to retain the experience of good professionals who are not destined to become audit partners. The common title many of the audit firms are using is managing director. Unfortunately, the Great Reset and the Great Resignation have many managing directors leaving the Big Four in large numbers to become partners at the next tier firms. This is a plus for the next tier firms, but it adds to what I see is the perfect storm scenario at the Big Four.
So, Bob, the words perfect storm sound troubling to me. So tell me more about what you see as contributing to your perfect storm.
Well, the Big Four business model has always been excessively reliant on high leverage, heavy workloads, and high turnover. It's been that way since I started in the profession over 40 years ago. The result is low experience levels, low year-over-year audit engagement team continuity on individual clients, and less than ideal supervision due to heavy partner and manager workloads. This is a mismatch for the complexity in accounting and auditing rules and the complexity of modern day commerce that auditors need to master to conduct good audits. On top of that, we are now adding staffing shortages into an already strained situation. And at the same time, we have a down economy that promises to challenge auditors in a way they have not been challenged since the credit crisis and the Great Recession.
Bob, you describe the audit firm business model as something that has been problematic throughout your 40-year career. Do you see any prospect of that model changing?
Yes, I do see the potential for change on the horizon. I see four converging initiatives, each focusing on transparency as a mechanism to stimulate competition for investor dollars on more than just financial results. First, Chair Gensler at the SEC has been a champion for expanded disclosure by public companies about how they manage their human capital, recognizing that how a company manages its human capital has a bearing on how investors might value the company. Chair Gensler specifically stated that, and I quote, "Investors want to better understand one of the most critical assets of a company, its people." He then went on to say this would include a number of metrics, such as workforce turnover. The large audit firms are not public companies, but it stands to reason that an investor relying on an auditor's opinion would be similarly interested in how the audit firm manages, or should I say mismanages, their human capital. As it stands currently, investors have no insight as to whether an individual audit was conducted as planned by an experienced team with high year-over-year engagement continuity and an appropriate level of supervision as promised, or was the audit the product of chaotic personnel changes that diminished experience levels and decreased the amount of supervision, all of which threatened to undermine audit quality? The second initiative is investor interest in ESG metrics, E for environmental, S for social, and G for governance. Much of the social component is about the company's management of its human capital and reward systems. Job satisfaction, employee retention, experience levels, and diversity, equity, and inclusion are among the basic elements. ESG goes well beyond the financial results to give investors a more balanced scorecard of how a company performs for all stakeholders, including investors, employees, vendors, customers, the community, the environment, and the relevant regulatory agencies. The third initiative is the Audit Quality Indicator Initiative that has been percolating at the PCAOB for several years. The concept here is to equip audit committees and investors with input and output measures pertaining to the audit that will enable more informed decisions about auditor retention. As it stands currently, the audit is largely seen as a black box, and all too often, the auditor retention decision is based on price rather than indicators of audit quality. Over the years, Competition on price has caused the audit firms to fall victim to commodity pricing for audit services. To achieve suitable levels of partner profitability in a commodity pricing environment, the audit firms have resorted to squeezing young professionals for productivity to the point where we have excessive workloads that cause high turnover, lower experience levels, and high ratios of staff to partners that undermine much needed supervision. Providing transparency at the engagement level to audit team operational metrics has great potential to drive improvements in the audit firm staffing model or risk losing the business. I have a quote from former SEC chief accountant Don Nicolaisen about what was then referred to as audit quality indicators while he was co-chair of the advisory committee on the auditing profession. Nicolaisen stated, "The firms compete primarily on the basis of cost. That's been the history of the profession, and it's been disastrous for investors and for the firms." The Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession recommended in 2008 that the PCAOB evaluate the feasibility and benefits of audit quality indicator disclosure. The PCAOB issued a concept release on audit quality indicators in 2015 that was favorably received by many, including the Center for Audit Quality. Finally, the fourth initiative that I'm referring to is the desire for expanded audit committee disclosures in the proxy statement. The SEC issued a concept release on this subject in 2015 regarding possible revisions to audit committee disclosures. Many respondents expressed a sentiment that investors had little to no visibility into how the audit committee was discharging its duties. There was some recognition that audit committee disclosures were expanding, and that was a good thing, but no new required disclosures were adopted. What we have today is dysfunctional. Most public companies seek shareholder ratification of the auditor appointment. However, the shareholders have very little information to use as the basis for casting their vote. Audit quality indicators can change that. There is also a potential to expose audit committees that have favored auditor retention when the metrics might suggest that a change may be in order. Part of the reason we have too many long-tenured auditors is because management and audit committees are fearful of auditor changes, favoring the devil they know versus the devil they don't know. While these four initiatives are all unique in their own respect, they each cry for transparency into how auditor human capital is either managed or mismanaged. There is a compelling case for more than just the status quo.
So, Bob, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board convened an almost entirely new board at the start of this year. Do you have a sense of the PCAOB's interest in advancing the Audit Quality Indicator Initiative?
Well, the audit quality indicators are not currently part of the PCAOB standard setting agenda. However, the PCAOB's Investor Advisory Group and Standards and Emerging Issues Advisory Group both met in June and expressed widespread support for audit quality indicators as a standard-setting priority. This expression of support is currently under PCAOB board consideration, but we've yet to hear how the board expects to proceed. This is related to an item on the PCAOB standard-setting agenda that is worth mentioning. It is the replacement of the PCAOB's antiquated quality control standards. A concept release on this subject, issued in 2019, described a system of monitoring controls over audit operations using metrics and milestones to identify outlier engagements in need of remedial attention. For example, a good monitoring system would flag threats to audit quality, such as excessive workloads, excessive turnover, low experience levels, low year-over-year continuity, low levels of supervision, or the failure to meet audit engagement milestones like timely completion of planning activities, interim reporting, and foreign subsidiary reporting. Each such item poses a threat to audit quality that should be dealt with before the audit opinion is signed by the audit firm. Audit committees deserve to know what the audit firm did under these circumstances to assure that audit quality was not compromised. The new quality control standard, if properly designed, can provide the foundation for external reporting of audit quality metrics and milestones at the engagement level, the office level, and national levels that can also be used by audit committees and investors to make more informed decisions about auditor retention. In some respects, audit firm monitoring of audit engagement metrics and external reporting of audit quality metrics are simply two sides of the same coin. So it's important that whatever the PCAOB does with the new quality control standard, it should be integrated with the PCAOB plans for external reporting of audit quality indicators.
Bob, in our planning for this podcast, you shared a couple of recent events that you believe reinforce the connection between excessive workloads and audit quality. Can you share with our listeners those recent events?
Sure. These are both interesting data points. In April, it was reported by EY Germany, after receiving the recommendations of an independent advisory commission tasked with improving internal control guidance in the wake of the Wirecard scandal, that it would address, and I quote, permanent occupational stress and overburdening, end quote, among its audit staff, in part by hiring more people and limiting after-hours work. The other recent data point comes from the SEC sanctions and cease and desist order against EY regarding cheating by audit professionals on both ethics exams and internal training, leading the SEC to levy a $100 million fine against EY. The SEC order noted, and I quote, many professionals acknowledged during the firm's investigation that they knew their conduct violated EY's code of conduct, but they cheated because of work commitments or an inability to pass training exams after multiple attempts. While the SEC's enforcement action did not specifically say that audit quality was also affected, it would be naive to believe otherwise. These are just two examples. The case for shining a light on how the audit firms mismanage their human capital goes well beyond these two data points. Academia has done considerable work since 2008 to demonstrate that excessive workloads and the loss of year-over-year engagement team continuity poses serious threats to audit quality. The PCAOB has never directly challenged the largest audit firms about how they mismanage their human capital. However, the time has come for the PCAOB to do just that. A good place to start would be to require the largest audit firms to provide audit committees and investors with visibility to audit firm operational metrics at the engagement level before the pipeline of future auditors shrinks even further. I strongly believe competition for audits will reward audit firms with better metrics at the engagement level and punish audit firms with the least favorable metrics.
That concludes our podcast episode. On behalf of the Council of Institutional Investors, I want to thank Bob Conway for speaking with us today. Bob is the author of The Truth About Public Accounting, Understanding and Managing the Risks the Auditors Bring to the Audit. If you have any questions or comments regarding this podcast, please feel free to contact me at Jeff, J-E-F-F, at CII.org. Until next time, I'm Jeff Mahoney. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Voice of Corporate Governance, brought to you by the Council of Institutional Investors. The Voice of Corporate Governance is a free, non-sponsored podcast that highlights critical developments in corporate governance and other important issues affecting institutional investors. The views expressed by those interviewed on the podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of CII or its members. For more information on CII and its policies on corporate governance, please visit our website at www.cii.org.